space bar and drift in space among asteroids and asterisks. The ampersands of time run through your fingers. The crescent moon is a closed parenthesis. Contract, ha! The keys strike sparks against the platen of platinum. The carriage is drawn by six white minks. And now you're in a concert hall at the console of the great Corona. Around the vast hall are busts in marble of the great composers. Beethoven, Brahms, Bach, Puttifat, Honeybun, Schubert, Smigley, Dorset. The audience is hushed and expectant. The conductor comes out, bows, turns to you.
The following, when performed by you and by us, will constitute a complete and binding concerto between us.
You nod your assent. The baton is raised. Ladies and gentlemen, was Daydream Number 8. Our concerto for typewriter comes in several sizes, including those in 2, 3, or 4 movements. Also, we are equipped to deliver on order a cantata for a cantometer. Next.
My name is Humphrey McDougall.
Well, how do you do?
I'm a cultured and sensitive young man, deeply interested in the arts.
I see.
And for some time now, I've been worried about the fact that my fiancée seems less and less to care about sharing my enthusiasm.
She does, eh?
Oh, she prefers to think and talk about movies and crooners and sensational murder trials.
Oh, please go on.
Well, I think she inherits a questionable values from her father. Very gross and opinionated man with no cultural background whatever.
Yes, well, what is your problem, Mr. M?
Well, I would like to apply for an intellectual-type daydream in which the girl of my daydreams would be completely versed in the 7 lively arts. Have you got anything like that around?
You bet we have. There's a very fine aesthetic daydream, the 24D, which would be very glad to have you try out. It's fully equipped with a cultured father and, if required or desired, 2 spare cultured brothers.
Oh, do you mind if I try it?
Glad to have you. That's what we're here for. No obligation to buy. You have just brought your girl home from the symphony concert, where you heard a preview of the Shostakovich Ninth and the Brahms variations on a theme by Semler. You are sitting in the living room.
Yes, Minerva, the Brahms piece was charming, of course, but my favorite of all his works remains the First Symphony. Don't you agree, Minerva?
I'll tell you. Most of the time, he's abstruse and sophisticated, and that gets me down.
But,
Oh, I grant you, his stuff is magnificent in outline and elaborate in detail. But give me the beautiful sorrows of Chopin or the mighty harmonies of Beethoven.
Yes, my dear, but after all, Chopin...
And Brahms. Brahms is too often completely reticent for my money, you know what I mean? Oh, I'll concede to you he has a great fecundity and melodic invention. That I'll give him. But you take Beethoven. If you was to make analogies with some of the other of the artistes, you could say that there is a synonymity between his works and Shakespeare's works. Hey, hand me that one of them bonbons, Cookie, huh?
Yes. But, my dear, such a comparison...
Now, take Sophocles.
Oh, well, Sophocles...
There was a guy who saw life steady and saw it whole.
Yes, but...
He had a high sardonic humor, so to speak. Whereas the comedy of Voltaire was different.
But, Minerva...
As Anatole France says... In Voltaire's fingers, the pen runs and laughs. Ain't that high-class corn? And while there is a kind of tumultuous splendor and glowing purity in some of Brahms's passages, he still ain't got that thing, that blend of impressionism with sentiment which you find in the works of Wagner, for instance. You know what I mean?
Yes, Minerva, but you can hardly compare
the work... Why can't you compare? You know what Aristophanes had to say about comparisons, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well, okay. Anyways, it ain't enough that the creative artist should be aflame with a sense of life. He's got to know how to control it and synthesize the whole shimmick thing. And the more premonition, the better. Ain't that right, Dad?
What's that, Minerva?
Why don't you pay attention, Colonel, instead of sitting there with that mint julep?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dot. I was busy reading a nerdy edition of the Essays of Montaigne.
But Minerva...
Hey, Pop, give Mac a load of your thesis about premonition as relative to the libido.
Well, I'd rather illustrate my point by quoting the great poet John Keats.
Go ahead, quote.
When I have failed, that I may cease to be... Before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain, before high pilot books in character hold like rich garners the full ripened grain, when I behold upon the night-starred face huge cloudy symbols of a great romance.
A high romance, not a great romance, you dope.
But what has this to do with...
Quiet, wait a minute. Give me a chance, will you? Your point is well taken, Mac. But as the immortal Bard said in Julius Caesar, the evil that men do lives after them.
The good is oft interred with their bones.
Say, wait a minute. How many of us are doing this?
Why, don't.
So let it be with Caesar.
The noble Brutus
had told you Caesar was ambitious.
Do you think that's anything you could use, Mr. McDougal?
No. And if that's a sample of the kind of daydreams you're carrying, I don't want any part of them. Why, it's insulting and ridiculous, and furthermore...
But, my dear man, that's only one
I'm
of several...
Sorry, I'm not interested. Good day.
Hello, GW? Say, what are you trying to do with that 24D item? Well, no, we just lost a sale. Well, have you heard it? It's terrible. How did the casting get away from you like that? No, I didn't see the memo. Well, whose fault is that? Bill, the very first thing that you people should look into is the compatibility angle. Why, the dame you had in that sounded like Minnie Pius. Poor guy couldn't get a word in edgewise. Well, it's too late for that now. Well, all right, yes, get rid of the whole line. Oh, I don't know, maybe Mammoth Studios. Well, no matter how you look at it, it's bad business. And I don't want to have anything like that ever happen in our sales rooms again. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I saw the report. No. Yeah. Okay, goodbye.
Yes, sir.
All right, send in the next customer.
Right away.
You'll build a business up from wishbone.
You work night and day. You put in overtime on Sundays and holidays. And then your nephew has to mess it up.
Is this the executive office of You Can Dream, Inc.?
Oh, come right in, sir, and be comfortable. What can we do for you?
Well, my name is Steve Chartok, and I run a local elevator up and down all day long.
Yes, Mr. Chartok.
This can get very dull, as I only go to the 14th floor. And after you've been operating the car for a while, you learn how to do it automatically, so you can practically stop the car in your sleep.
Oh, yes, I see.
The elevator's always crowded, too, so you don't get to meet people. And consequently, you make very few contacts that can do you any good.
Well, yes, Mr. C. And I take it you'd like an occupational daydream?
Yeah. I've tried making up my own daydreams, but whenever I do, I miss a floor and get blazes from some passenger.
We have just the thing for you.
Good.
It's known as the 32 Jumbo. Would you like to try it?
I sure would.
You take over the elevator on the late shift. It looks the same as it's always looked, but you know there are subtle differences. The elevator is crowded as usual. You make all the stops up to the 14th floor. The last passenger to get off is a very cute little number with very dark eyes. She is about to leave the car when something makes her hesitate.
Do you go higher?
Not as a rule, madam. This is the last local stop. You have to catch the express car if you want to go higher.
Well, I would like to go to the top floor.
Yes, ma'am. Express is just across the hall.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, just a minute, miss. Come back. I'll take you.
Oh, thank you. But you've gone past the 25th floor.
Yes, I know, madam. At any moment, we'll go through the roof.
No, no, you mustn't.
Be calm, madam, and brace yourself. I'm sorry I had to wreck the roof on the way up, but this has been an ambition of mine for a long time.
We're rising. We're going very fast.
Trust in me, madam. I shall see you through.
See how far we are above the city.
I'm afraid that's to be expected.
What's that thing coming toward us?
Well, have no fears, madam. That's merely a patrol plane. Small wonder the pilot looked puzzled.
But what if he decided to attack us?
Don't worry. We're climbing faster than he could possibly climb. We'll soon be out of range.
What's this fishy smell all of a sudden?
Merely mackerel clouds.
Ooh, it's getting very cool.
I came prepared for this. The automatic heater.
Oh, that's better. You're a brave man.
Oh, not at all. I do my job, and I try to do it well. You see, all my life I've tried to rise above my environment. Reach heights never before attained by any other elevator operator, living or dead.
Oh, that's a noble ambition.
In other words, I've hitched my elevator to a star. And I've often thought
that... I get terribly dizzy when I look out of this window.
Please face the front of the car.
Oh, you're so strong, so good, so wise.
You are so beautiful.
Oh, please.
Do you think you could learn to care?
I might.
Will you kiss me?
Don't you think this is rather sudden?
I don't want to take advantage of our position. Perhaps you're right.
Well, what's that?
The starter. He wants me to come back.
Are you going to?
Never.
But what kind of future is there in just keeping on climbing?
Madam, I am in heaven when I am with you.
Oh, you say the loveliest things. Oh, what's happening? It seems as though we're slowing up.
Yes, madam. The gravity of the situation has overtaken us.
Oh, my. Are we just going to float in the substratosphere like this? I can't stand the suspense.
What does it matter, madam? I love you.
Oh, Stephen, I love you. I loved you from the minute that large woman stepped off at the 4th floor and I saw you for the first time.
I felt it. May I kiss you?
Please do.
Well, then what happens?
Well, when you wake up on the 14th floor.
Oh.
However, if you'd like daydream number 60A, we can carry you further along.
Well, I would like that.
Well, send in your application, and please mention the Columbia Broadcasting System when you send it in.
Yes, sir.
Next?
I'm a clerk.
A clerk, did you say?
Yes. I've always wanted to dream about being a big man in big business. I've never known where to begin.
I see. Would you be interested in a daydream involving chairmanship of a board of directors?
Oh, that would be splendid. Could there be as many as 20 men on the board?
That's simple enough to arrange. Would you care to deliver a speech at, say, an annual meeting of stockholders?
If you've got anything along that line.
Oh, we just happen to have. And moreover, we can use a man like you. Now look, you are chairman of the board of directors of an up-and-coming institution known as You Can Dream Incorporated. The conference room is full of directors and stockholders. As you rise to your feet, an expectant hush falls upon your auditors. You start to speak, but you have a frog in your throat. Therefore, you clear your throat. Then you proceed.
Gentlemen, we have had a good year. Our capitalization of daydreams has exceeded our wildest, shall I say, dreams. But let's get serious for a moment, gentlemen. Now that we are a going concern, perhaps this is a good time to examine the nature of our product. Curiously enough, the dreams most in demand are not the novelty fantasies or even our bargain-priced megalomaniac visions, but the simplest and truest quality dreams designed along the most realistic lines. There's a certain poetic wisdom, gentlemen, in the fact that illusions of grandeur should come so cheaply, while the humblest dreams, those which the masses of the people seek most, should be the highest priced.
The highest priced, did you say?
Yes, Mr. Vandegrift. For to achieve the most basic dreams, men are at this very moment leaving their homes and all they love, to engage their enemies, the despoilers of dreams, to fight, to sacrifice, to die. And for what? For a promise of tomorrow. This, you may remark, is surely a high price to pay for any dream. But what are these dreams so dearly bought? Well, take a look at the catalog marked Dreams Today, Realities Tomorrow. You will see that item number one is Victory and Peace. No ordinary peace, mind you, but the very finest, the just and lasting peace. You will notice that the negotiated variety appeals to nobody except a few subscribers interested in Spanish castles built by Franco or in dreams of racial superiority, both types having become so increasingly unpopular for general consumption that we discontinued carrying them as of the last quarter.
Good.
Now, if you will examine the lesser dreams under this category, you will find them broken down into very simple components, which we trust will be installed in every home once the main dream has been accomplished. For example, let us consider dream 2B. 2B is simply the daydream of a job wherein a man can fulfill himself. Nothing fancy about that, is there, Mr. Hammersley?
No.
Mr. Plotkin?
No.
Then let our salesman see to it that nobody is without one.
Check.
And then there is 3W, the wherewithal dream. The wherewithal dream is that in which the consumer is insured of the wherewithal to guarantee shelter, food, and clothing for himself and his family. It will be important to see that a good stock of this is laid in before the post-war season gets underway, because time has proven that this type of dream has the effect of moving people in the right direction.
But this is going to take little planning, won't it, Mr. Chairman?
Right you are, Mr. Wamsgans. Now, it is the consensus of the board that the wherewithal should be made available in a handy combination pack with Dream L, which, as you know, is our code for leisure.
May I make a remark here, Mr. Chairman?
Well, feel free to make any comment you wish.
Inasmuch as leisure is a dream which far too few people have hitherto been able to afford, I hope it'll come as part and parcel of the wherewithal. In other words, the wherewithal should be sufficient to support leisure.
Mr. Wamsgans, you are cooking on high octane.
Thank you.
Well, now, gentlemen, I just want to conclude with a note of warning. We must face the fact that our inventory will have to be sharply reduced as the fortunes of war improve. We must be prepared to strike a number of items off the books because the dreams which have up to now seemed so remote, dreams of wherewithal and leisure, together with the modest aspirations of common men for peace and dignity and bread, will be no longer commodities of wishful thinking, but realities of life. In the years to come, men will build new dreams, for it is the nature of our species to progress. And I think it can be safely said that when better dreams are built, we will build them.
I'm an announcer named Harry Marble.
Yes, Mr. Marble. What's your problem?
Well, I'm an announcer.
I see. And what kind of dream can we service you with?
Well, sir, I've always felt that it's a pity announcers are relegated to opening and closing routines with little chance at self-expression and...
You mean you want to dream about being an actor?
Oh, no. I'd just like to be featured in a daydream whereby I could still announce, but with style and dash.
Style and dash.
Well, yes, something by which the listener could remember me, by which there would be no mistaking me for Frank Gallup or David Ross or Tony Marvin.
You'd want them to make no mistake about the fact that it was Harry Marble announcing, right?
Yes.
Easy. What you want is closing routine daydream 2930.
The program is nearing an end. The studio is tense. The distinguished audience sits with its eyes fixed on a door through which is expected momentarily a very important personage. At a CBS microphone in a press box high above the studio sits Bob Trout, famous radio reporter. He is describing the event.
Ladies and gentlemen, I believe Harry Marble has just entered the studio at the West Portal. Yes, it is Marble. He's tanned and healthy, and he's nodding to the company as he strides briskly toward his microphone. Now the musicians are rising. They have risen to greet him. The conductor has stepped off the podium to shake his hand. Mr. Marble has graciously accepted the baton which has been proffered to him, and he's now breaking it over his knee and handing back the narrow end. It's an old Chinese custom, I believe, but the significance escapes me at the moment. The conductor is bowing, and now Marble has turned and is heading this way. He's just waved to several justices of the United States Supreme Court who are sitting in the audience, and they've waved back. The justices wave right back at him. Yes, there's an air of festivity and gaiety such as I've never seen in a studio. My, now four actors have stepped up, and they're presenting Mr. Marble with gifts appropriate to the occasion. From left to right, there a bouquet of flowers, a bronze plaque, there's a loving cup, and a marble urn. Mr. Marble has just pulled a nifty, ladies and gentlemen. In accepting the marble urn, he said he hoped to make it a receptacle for marble earnings. You can see why he's a great favorite here. And now he's continuing his progress toward the microphone, carrying his gifts in one hand and his script in the other. He's a dashing picture with his coattails flapping in the air conditioning system. He's very happy. We can see that from here. And as he nearly tripped over a microphone cable. But nothing ruffles his composure, really. No, sir. Good old Harry. And here he is, abreast of the microphone, ready to make the important announcement for which you have all been waiting. Ladies and gentlemen, the next voice you hear will be that of Harry Marble. A great hush has fallen on the assembly, and at any moment now, you will hear the long-awaited voice of Harry Marble. I don't know what's delaying him. He's standing at the microphone. His eyes are closed. He is about to speak.
This... is Harry Marble. You have been listening to You Can Dream, Incorporated. Written, directed, and produced by Norman Corwin for CBS as the sixth of a limited series of 26 programs, bringing you a variety of entertainment, musical, dramatic, and documentary. In the cast tonight were Minerva Pius, Bob Trout, John Griggs, Sam Raskin, Ruth Gilbert, Ralph Bell, Joseph Julian, Eleanor Sherman, Lon Clark, Kermit Murdoch. The original musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Next week at this time, Columbia presents Norman Corwin's composite biography of an American soldier entitled Untitled. Frederick March, distinguished actor of stage, screen, and radio, will be starred in the production, and music will be composed and conducted by Columbia's prize-winning Bernard Herrmann. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.